Hey, Heather. Hey, Matt. I know Devin has a really good song that he's composed for the show and that kind of people have gotten used to, but I actually have an idea for a new main title theme.
Oh.
Oh. Wow, Nick.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thanks for springing this on us. I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, I would be careful, though, because you shouldn't... I mean, Devin's, like, really tough, and if you try to eat his lunch in front of him, he's going to be real mad.
Well, yeah, I know. He'll hear this, and this is the thing. He'll hear this when he's editing the episode and mixing the episode, but I think when he hears it, he'll be like, oh, yeah, of course, that's the theme. So I think he'll put his ego aside and just sort of accept it.
Okay, yeah, he'll hear how good it is, and yeah, he'll admit that he's no longer the Mr. Sound-loving man.
Yeah, which he calls himself.
Yes, that's right.
Anyway, I think that, you know, Get Back is kind of in the zeitgeist right now because the documentary that everyone's watching.
Uh-huh.
And mm-hmm. I just thought that's a natural, like, kind of in for us, if you'll indulge me.
Wait, hold on. I feel like I missed a step here.
Yeah, Get Back, the Beatles documentary, and the song, people are thinking of the song again, and our shows get played. So it's like a natural sort of point of synergy for, and let me just get the song out.
Wait, no. First off, we can't afford a Beatles song as our theme song. Like, that's some insane licensing fee every mm-hmm. single week. Secondly, I don't think people are thinking about that song. Like, maybe you watch the documentary and you're thinking about it, but it's not like it's charting again.
It came out like 2 months ago, too. Like, it's like kind of old news at this point.
I just watched part one this morning and I'm really thinking about it a lot. So look, let here's the thing. First off, the licensing fee, you know, I'm good for it.
Oh, I forgot.
No, money back. Second off,
I'm deeply unlikely.
Second off, it's fair use. It's a parody. All right, here we go. Okay, here's the song.
Here we go.
Weiger was a man who had himself a podcast with his friends, Heather and Matt. All together, they talked about some video games and stuff like that. Get played is what the podcast is. Get played. Get ready to fill your pants with jizz.
Okay.
I think it's the fear in your voice that really sells that. The trembling fear.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I know that
so I wanted to convey.
We were sort of like, oh, we don't know about this. Now having heard it, Devin, you're fucking fired.
We listen to and discuss our favorite video game main title themes and listen to and discuss our favorite listener questions this week on Get Played. Weiger was a man who had himself a podcast with his friends Heather and Matt. All together they talked about some video games and stuff like that. Get played is what the podcast is. Get played. Get ready to fill your pants with jizz.
Welcome to Get Played, your one-stop show for good games, bad games, and every game in between. It's time to Get Played! I'm your host, HAC, along with fellow host, Nick Weiger.
Hi, I'm Nick Weiger. NFW are my initials. Along with Matt Apodaca.
Hello, everyone. It's Matt Apodaca, MKA, with K. Stands for Kyle.
Kyle?
Is that true?
Yeah. Aww. It's true. My mom was a big Twin Peaks fan, and she loved Kyle MacLachlan.
Do you like the show?
I've tried to watch it 100 times, and I don't think it's for me. I don't know. Maybe I'd like to give it a try. You know, as of this recording, as of truly 20 minutes ago, I finished The Sopranos for the first time.
Wow!
Really? You're hot off of The Sopranos. You just watched the finale.
I just watched the finale.
The polarizing, controversial finale.
Yeah, and I knew what the ending was.
Right.
So going into it, I was like, well, I know it's how this ends. And let me tell you something. Even knowing it, it was still very shocking. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
It really is just like that.
It's a choice. It's quite a choice.
But I can't wait to watch the bad movie. And then who knows where my journey ends with The Sopranos. I got a lot of
questions.
You got
to play the bad video game. You got to play Sopranos Road to Respect for PlayStation 2.
I don't do that anymore, unless it's canon.
It is canon. Joey Nails is canon.
Oh, okay.
The protagonist of the game.
Joey Nails.
It's funny to think that Weiger was involved in writing canon for Sopranos.
The by the way, I like the bad movie, Many Saints of Newark.
You like it? Okay. I'm going to go into it with an open mind.
Yeah, I mean, it should not be a movie, but I still kind of liked it because it's like the Silmarillion kind of Sopranos. It just informs so much lore, even though it itself is kind of unwieldy.
Sure.
Yeah, but I'd recommend it if you just watch all of Sopranos.
I'm
going
to watch it maybe after this, honestly. Like, who knows?
I think that would be a valuable way to think about sequels and spinoffs is as encyclopedic additions without plot. Like, it would be so cool to, like, if you saw, like, a Star Wars movie and it was, like, it was just on Coruscant and there was, like, some minor stuff, but it also just filled in a bunch of new shit. Like, not specifically, like, did you know who made Darth Vader's helmet? Like, not that kind of shit.
Yeah.
But, like, just, like, world-building stuff, like, supplementary material as concepts for sequels would be pretty cool.
We have to print out this podcast and mail it to yourself, Heather, because you just gave Disney Plus a free idea for an anthology series.
Oh, I see. You think that's how copywriting.
You got to print this out.
Yes. You mail it to yourself and then the postmark.
Yeah.
A judge will look at the postmark and say, like, okay, case closed.
You get to make this now.
This is yours.
That's how they allow it. Yeah, this is yours.
I wonder if there's ever been an instance in history when that actually happened.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you can sometimes register these things. Like, there's offices you can register with, like, the Writers Guild of like a script or a treatment, like a concept. And I don't even think that is ironclad legally. Hmm. I think all this shit is, like, kind of specious. But who knows?
I think it's true. I think it's true, just in the same way that, like, police officers have to tell you if they're a cop.
Yeah, that gets me out a lot of scrapes.
Yeah.
I'm asking that all the time. The big news of the past week regarding a game that we covered on the podcast is that Cyberpunk released its big old 1.5 patch, finally has the PS5 and the Xbox Series X versions live, and, you know, just a bunch of rebalancing, a bunch of bug fixes, quality of life improvements, aesthetic improvements. I haven't messed around with it, but Matt, you have a little bit.
Yeah, I got... Well, because we've been talking about it so much. It's been coming up pretty recently, I feel like, on the show with us. And I've been getting that itch to get back in there and revisit it. And so this update truly dropped. Couldn't have dropped at a worse time for me personally. Like, I have too much shit to do. And I was like, I'm in the middle of playing something else. And there's
watching
other games,
The Sopranos.
And watching The Sopranos. And, you know, tried to function as an adult in this world. But I got back in there. I got back into my old save and just to see, like, how it felt. Mm-hmm. And it immediately made me start a new save. Like, I wanted to start a new save.
Wow.
It feels like I don't know. I can't speak to, cause, like, there's stuff about it that rocks, obviously, and it is fun. But then there's really dumb stuff, like story stuff and, like, just in the world stuff that's dumb. So I can't speak to all that stuff yet, but it feels like a new game. It feels like a completely different game. Like, it feels like And I feel like a lot of that has to do with the DualSense control. Like, that just goes so far with playing a game like Cyberpunk, because it didn't feel like, I don't know, I felt like in the old one, comparatively, it didn't feel like the movement lined up necessarily. Like, it was too smooth. This feels a little more,
do you mean the character movement, or are you talking about driving, or
character movement, drive, like all of it? Like, it feels, this feels more like on purpose, sort of. And I mean, the triggers feel great on the guns and stuff. And I started a new, path completely. I was a street kid before. And I'm going the corpo route for this playthrough. And I'm interested to see how it differs. I'm interested to see I've had no issues with it thus far. As far as glitches or, you know, crashing or anything like that. But it feels good, and I'm excited to be back in it, to be back in Night City. I've already, at least when you boot it up and, you know, you hear the guy, I think his name is Stanley, who's like, "Good morning, Night City." Yes. I've at least heard him say something different. Like, upon loading it up a couple of times.
What the fuck are you doing back? Don't you know?
He was like, this shuffling for his stuff. He's like, I didn't know anyone was going to be here today. But it feels good. And it looks great. The graphical update is really good. I was turning on and off performance mode and ray tracing. And the thing about ray tracing is I just don't understand. Performance mode looks good. I just don't get why it's better. It doesn't look that much different to me.
Yeah, but like, imagine that there was a puddle, right?
Yeah.
And the light from the puddle hit your shoe. Wouldn't that be worth waiting almost 2 years to see that light from the puddle hit you?
Yeah. That, you know what? You're right. That I didn't even realize that. That's a really, yeah. No, I'm going to turn on ray tracing.
It's dazzling, but it does seem to just hog so many resources right now that sometimes it feels like it's not quite there. You're hoping that there would be, you know, like that ray tracing and 60 FPS and 4K would just be standard for this generation. It just does not seem to be happening.
Yeah, I want to see the shadows on V's dick. You know, like, give me some dick shadow.
And I don't just mean penis one. I mean penis two as well.
Yeah. That was something interesting too, is that there's penis one and penis two, but I feel like they changed the language on I can't remember what, if it was this always, and maybe it was, and people will be like, it was that. But there's penis one and penis two, or off. That's still true.
Yes. Yes. Mm.
But when you do the length of it, it's small or big. I can't remember
if that was the case. They did have size you could do. But I remember there being like a medium option too.
No, it was medium like a three anymore.
Sword situation. No. Oh, they're just big or small.
Either
they
yeah.
had to use, wow. Those resources went to ray tracing. They had to remove medium penis.
They removed medium penis. It says it was patched out. Yeah.
It was in development for so long that it was like taking up like a gig and a half of resources.
Yeah.
Like,
this normal dick is crashing our game.
Well, no one picks it is the thing. They were just like, you know what? Everyone either has the power fantasy of picking the biggest dick they can imagine, or they're like, I'm pathetic, my dick's small.
Yeah.
No one's like, I'm average.
But I didn't even, I picked female V for this second playthrough because I was like, I'm sick of this man's voice. No,
I've heard the this is the thing I've heard from a few different people, is that the female V's VO, the game's protagonist is better, is a better performance than the male. The male's kind of a little aggro.
It's a little better.
You get to fuck that lady. Yeah. If you're female.
Judy.
What's her name? Judy. You get to fuck that lady.
Who's to say why I made the choices that I made? But I'm excited to play through it again. And already the corpo route was interesting at the start. I was like, wow, this is cooler. This just seems cool.
It's a cool start, and then it just like it seems like none of that shit really matters as you progress into the main story. Maybe they added some of that, more of that in the update. But Matt, it seems like you have answered without me asking What are you playing?
Oh, yeah. I'm playing that. I also started, I won't give it too much time to this.
Heather didn't say it.
Heather didn't say it.
She just doesn't have it in her head this week.
Nick, well, it's the morning. This is a rare morning record
it's
for
true.
Us.
It's true, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And usually by nighttime, I'm dead inside. But right now, I'm filled with a little hope. So
okay,
maybe it could be more like, prompt me again. Let's see if I do it. Let's see if this works.
Okay, well, this will be a pickup. Okay, well, Matt, it seems you've answered without me asking. What are you playing?
What are you playing?
that's hopeful to you.
That's the morning hopeful. What are you playing?
Interesting that you start your days like that. I start my days with, oh, not this again. Oh, great.
Here we go again.
I am playing.
Like you're locked into a new game plus every day.
Yeah.
Like, what? What?
Why me?
Carrying over yesterday's stats again.
I didn't even
My
do that good yesterday.
Yeah.
I am playing Cyberpunk. I also, I'm in the end game of Pokemon Legends Arceus.
I thought you finished that bad boy.
I did finish.
You're in the post game content.
I'm in the post game stuff. I think I have nine side quests left. Because it has, there's a list. I have that, and then I have to complete the Pokedex to complete the main game, to finish the final task. And that's going to take me some time. So that's like, you'll hear updates about that from me, sparingly now at this point. But yeah. Sifu's still good. And I started in hopes of finishing it before tomorrow, and there's no way that I'm going to. I don't know why I thought I could do this. Anyway, Horizon Zero Dawn. I'm playing Horizon Zero Dawn, and I got to a part.
You thought you could finish this game in a week while playing two other games.
I just, it's... When you say it like that, it sounds hubristic, of course, but then I look at what I've done thus far in the pandemic, and I was like, I think I could do this. Because it's like a 15, 16-hour game. I was like, I think I could do it. But yeah, it was hubristic at best. And also, I'm not even going to get the new one because Elden Ring comes out next week. What am I doing?
Yeah, it's tough timing.
Yeah, but
tough timing for the new Horizon.
I just got to a part early in the game in Horizon Zero Dawn where it clicked for me, and now I really love it. I was sort of like, I don't really know if this is my game, but I got to like a big combat part in the beginning of it, and I was like, wow, this is really fun. I actually really like this, so now I'm going to stick with that. But, who knows what's going to happen next week.
Yeah.
That's it for me.
Wow.
I just ordered Horizon Forbidden West because I'd forgotten that it comes out.
Wow.
I was like, oh, right. And I know that I'm only going to play like, it's going to be the exact same experience I had for the first Horizon, which is I'm going to play it for like a tiny chunk of time. Then a game that I truly am looking forward to, Elden Ring, is coming out. And I will have to put down Horizon. And then when I finally come back to it, I'll be like, oh, what a pleasure.
Yes.
What a wonderful, it's kind of what I wish I had done with Cyberpunk, because I have I platinumed it. I don't have nothing. There's no reason for me to load the. I got that trophy for the weird jump. Like there's like a jump where you have to like hit somebody in the head or something. Like there's nothing more for me to see in Night City until the DLC. But I wish you luck on your Horizon journey.
Thank you.
I don't think it's possible what you want to do.
No, and I should learn from this. I should just really take some time and think about how I'm living my life and that what I'm doing. I can't finish a game this big in a week.
It seems to be working for you though, because I think your completion rate of games is better than the two of us.
Yeah,
I think you somehow you somehow are able to keep all these plates spinning and still see these games through to the end for the most part.
Yeah, and I eat dinner, I go outside too, I get all this stuff done. What I gotta figure out how to use this power that I have for good. And like put it to good use.
Yes.
Who knows?
Write a happiness guide. People love those.
Well, I'm not miserable. I wouldn't say.
<that. laughs> I'll talk a little bit about some things that I've been playing. So the first up, I rolled credits on Ratchet and Clank.
Wow.
For PS5, and it's man, what a great game. What a hoot. What an absolute nice. Blast. Just pure joy. I will say that I'm glad I just pushed through to the end game. Thanks, Heather. I'm glad I just sort of like I reached a point where I'd upgraded efficiently enough the weapons that I was using the most, where I was just kind of like, you know, melting screens on normal difficulty. And I don't know, I like to do my first playthroughs on normal difficulty or whatever difficulty I think that the game was balanced towards in development. And so it had just gotten kind of like not too, you know, I won't say easy, but not really a challenge as I progressed, even though I was having a blast. So I was just like, I'm glad I just sort of put the side quests aside and just went just mainlined it. It's a great end game, really satisfying final few missions, the way that the dual protagonists kind of just like their narratives and that they're. Their narratives, their arcs, their little companions all sort of converge is very satisfying. Matt, we talked a little bit about, Clank has his little adventures in a cyber world where he has these puzzles, and the way those progress and those pay off is really satisfying and makes you feel like a genius. So I don't know. It's just the total package. It's great. Wow. It's a very satisfying game. Just a pure a busy screen filled with effects and gorgeous art and animation and good sound design, and it just never stops being just a real hoot. So I really enjoyed my time with that, and I've been playing more Death's Door, which I touched on last week, which I keep wanting to call Darkest Dungeon because it's also got a DD name, and it's. Not at all the same game. No. I won't. It's completely different because Darkest Dungeon is horrifying, but Death's Door is very charming. Hmm. One thing about Death's Door that I'll say is that the combat has an element that I didn't pick up on until I was playing it a little bit more, which is that your attacks don't interrupt enemy animations. So it's really just like, you know, about it's not like you can stagger a guy when he's about to, you know, hit you with this big attack, if you time it right, like he's still going to complete that animation.
Yeah.
And so it's more just sort of like it's very much like dodging and rolling and sort of picking your spots and getting your hits in there. And it makes the combat deceptively simple, but very fun. And it's charming. It's another game that's just like gorgeous, although it's not quite pushing the technical limits in the way that a game with a massive team like Ratchet and Clank is. And some nice difficulty to it. I really like the sort of I like isometric games.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about an isometric game next week in depth. Disco Elysium, very different game, but I really like the isometric camera angle. In fact, that might be my favorite angle.
Whoa! Wow!
I think that's I like an isometric game.
Yeah, that's how you view yourself in the world. It's sort of like
yeah.
Above and to the left.
Yes. I can only go in the cardinal directions.
You hear that, Tri? You hear that, Kurt? Nick's got a new favorite angle.
Wow.
I enjoyed that. But, you know, he uses the isometric camera to hide secrets, which I think is just a fun way of doing things. Of just, I don't know, it's not the only game that's ever done that, but I like where it's like, oh, I can sort of snake around the corner here, and what's this? The camera's gonna pivot, and aha, here's a little, you know, here's a little orb that's gonna let me power up my skills. I don't know. This game's great. It's so fun. It's just so joyous.
I can't wait to play it.
And it's on Game Pass
in like a year or something when I can play it.
Yeah, I mean, it took me some time to get to this one. It came out, I think, in the middle of last year, maybe in the fall. But I'm really glad that I did, and I'm very excited to have a game that is an achievable length to complete before Elden Ring comes out and disrupts all of our worlds. Also, you know, I played a track from the soundtrack last week. I'm going to play another one now. Just a great soundtrack, the composer David Fenn. This is a track that's playing in one of the dungeons. This is Ceramic Manor.
this is smooth.
It's great. You're just walking around as a crow with a sword, some fire magic.
Kill my brother! Kill my brother! I hate my brother! Kill him for me!
Hello, Crow.
The lore is not that dark. Anyway, I love this
help
game.
You with, Crow?
Kill my brother! I want to fuck his wife!
Please do it so I can do that.
That was the narrative twist in the game. Jesus Christ. Fucking psychopath. Heather, what are you playing?
Well, what are you playing?
It's like a fun monster that you found. It's not a scary monster. It's like a monster that you're trying to protect because everyone thinks he's bad, but he's actually good.
Yeah.
What are you playing?
It's not a top tier Muppet. It's like, you know, it's like a Muppet hardcore fan knows that Muppet's name.
Yeah. It's like Grover's like nephew.
Yeah.
I'm Froger.
Froger.
Hi, Froger.
Kill my brother. Oh, I'm his wife.
Oh, God. Froger.
Well, look, I think this was probably the last week that I'll do this because we got big games coming out in the next couple of weeks. So I'm going to be up to my eyeballs in Horizon. I'm going to be up to my eyeballs in Elden Ring. The game I'm currently full-time playing is Disco Elysium in prep for next week's show, mm-hmm. which, you know, it's great. But I'm still playing Final Fantasy First Soldier. We're about to come to the end of the first season. The retro skins and retro enemies were just released. So you're running around on the map and you see like old PlayStation polygonal characters and the old school music kicks in and you fight those guys and you get parts. And if you save those parts, then you can unlock like polygonal version of Cloud in a dress or like a skin that makes you look like one of those random Shinra soldiers. It's great. It's such a great. I have only had one team battle where somebody was trolling the team. Otherwise, the community is super solid. And I've also run into a couple of listeners from the show playing the game, randomly paired up and teamed up with people who listen to the show and have listened to me, you know, glorify the dopamine reward system of this battle royale. And I gotta say, is a little weird in a nice way, nice way. I wasn't put off, but I've never had the experience of another player in the game having my name as part of their handle.
Sure.
And, and I don't know, there's two ways to interpret it. One is, you know, a little scary, and one is just really nice. And I'm choosing nice because all of the communication has been nice. Like it wasn't like, oh, thank God I found you. I can't wait to bury you in your own backyard. Like it wasn't like that. It was,
Heather,
it was
kill
really,
my brother.
It was, no, it's been really nice. It's happened two times with two different people and it's been really nice. But yeah, I love the game so much and I can't wait for the next season. And it's made me think about games in general and what I like about games. And I know that I like the slogan, I don't like puzzles, and the slogan, I like combat. Like those are like really, really reductive versions of the things that I find rewarding in games. And I think what I'm learning is I play games like an addict. Not like somebody who, like, it's not enough for me to be like, oh, this game has like a castle and a, like, you can upgrade the cat. Like, I need like a hit of serotonin and dopamine in order to get me to continue to play the game. And the fastest pathways to those hits are either combat where you like beat another human being or RPG reward systems, because after each battle, it's like the numbers are going up, which is your your boost.
Yeah.
And I think that's why those two are my favorite. I don't get any satisfaction from just like, you know, like a airplane shooter game, you know, like a 2D scrolling airplane shooter game. I did at one point dip into that and like beat Radiant Silver Gun and Ikaruga. Like I tried getting that fix, but it wasn't punchy enough. Like you'd beat a boss after just a stream of bullets and you wouldn't feel like you'd accomplished something. You wouldn't feel like you did something. You felt like you escaped something. Does that make sense? Like you avoided enough attacks that you were managed to get through something. Whereas combat in like this battle royale or in Street Fighter, which I'm also still playing, and thank you everyone who's reached out about my joystick. Those are like, I did this, not I avoided this. And that's why I think my taste is the way that it is. And it's also why I liked, like, you know, Donkey Kong Country back in the day. Like, it's like, oh shit, I finally beat the minecart level. Or when we play Battletoads, I was like, fuck, I did it. You know, like I felt proud. So
I gave up on Battletoads. But I'm impressed by anyone who beat it.
So next week I'll be talking about other games, but I'm still playing First Soldier until, I don't know. I don't know what's going to make me stop playing the game. It is so satisfying.
That's it.
That's what I play.
I definitely am with you on the satisfaction of upgrades. Like there is something of just like, hey, I'm getting more points, whether that's I'm unlocking a new skill in my skill tree or I'm getting a new level. That to me is so, so satisfying. And I feel like it's pretty universally satisfying, which is why we've seen basically every game have some version of experience or skill tree, even genres that didn't used to have those elements.
Yeah. Even playing like the Halo Infinite multiplayer, that's free to play. And so there's like a battle pass, and the battle pass gets you like the first 25 levels, but anything after that, you're leveling up on your own. And right now I'm level like 43 or something. And I know that people are like, I haven't been playing it that much recently. Mm-hmm. But people are probably like,
other games you're trying to get through.
Yeah. And Halo is an easy one to put down. Cause I was really only there for the, socializing and I, you know, I guess I could care less about that is what I'm saying. I'm a lone wolf, but I was like, will I run into people that know the show? And because I won't reveal my gamer tag, but if you're smart, you could probably figure it out. But it has
Emma Apodaca.
Yeah. Okay. Well, wait a second. Don't dox me. But it so far hasn't happened yet. But somebody did message me one time to tell me to get good, and it did hurt my feelings.
Sure. Yeah.
Did you get good?
Wound that never heals.
No, I remain bad, but sometimes I'm surprised at how good I am at it. I'll always do math afterwards. I'm like, okay, so there were 50 kills in this match, and I killed, and there's four of us. So how many is, you know, that divided by, like, what's the, like, how many kills is that per person? And then compare that to how many kills that I got, and then be like, okay, I actually did pretty good. I did some of the, sometimes I'll do most of the killing.
So just send that math back at the person who is trolling you.
Oh, yeah, sir. Because
they'll have no rebuttal.
Butt Muncher 420, here, how about this? I got something for you to munch on. Tag. Stats.
Oh.
What are you munching?
For the topic of this week, inelegantly pivoting to our second act.
Good. That's good.
For our topic this week, I don't have a segue, but I'm excited to talk about this. This is an addition of a format that we used to do on our DLC episodes. Now, that's what I call video game music.
talk through some of our favorite game music. And this week we're talking main title themes.
Wow.
Now, when I think of main title themes, and I'm curious as to your individual definitions, and I'm sure we'll probably see this explored when we get to your choices. We're each going to have like a triforce of three different themes that we've picked. But I think of something that is playing while we're seeing like the press start options, you know, like we're just seeing that main menu, whatever the fuck that is. And sometimes that's accompanied by some sort of attract mode or some sort of animation. You know, I think of like Super Mario World has a pretty good, it's
Sonic
not one of my
CD.
Picks, but yeah, these have great like kind of main title themes, mm-hmm. but they're not necessarily only playing while the logo is present on screen and you can choose to press start.
If you're not a gamer, it's the music that plays like when you wake up, but you haven't yet opened your eyes. It's that song you hear in your head. That's your daily main theme.
Yeah. For me, it's Goodbye Horses. Shall we get into our picks?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. I guess I'll start. Why not?
Okay.
Go off.
This one is from a Super Nintendo game called ActRaiser that apparently had a pretty disappointing remaster, which is a bummer. But the original game, I don't know how well it holds up as a game, but the music holds up fantastically. Composed by Yuzo Koshiro, who composed for a ton of games, most famously Streets of Rage. This is Opening from ActRaiser.
Wow.
It's impossible to convey just how epic this felt in the early 90s after coming off of the era of gaming that I had was, you know, PC speaker integrated audio, like literally one channel of beeps and boops and NES 8-bit. Coming to this, it was just like such an upgrade in audio fidelity. And you're accompanying this with the Mode 7 graphics of the fucking logo, you know, spinning around, the sprite rotation and scaling, which seemed utterly impossible at the time. Yeah, I mean, this is a great theme.
It's so interesting. I mean, I've never even heard of that. So like, I never would have heard. I've never heard of it. Yeah, I've never seen anything from it, so I don't know. I'm unfamiliar with it, so I would never have heard that song had you not shared it with me right now, and it's very good.
Yeah, there you go. And you know what else is good? There's a symphonic suite version of this, which back in the Winamp days of MP3 players, this was in my rotation, this whole symphonic suite album, here's the symphonic suite version of the ActRaiser opening. Actual brass.
Wow.
Got a fucking orchestra playing this shit.
I mean, if this played in church, I would believe in God. I'd be like, oh!
Yeah.
Oh, it's happening.
He is my Lord and Savior. This is good.
Yeah, this good is stuff. Awesome.
All right, great. That's my
first
pick. That's
one of my favorite things about the old Super NES soundtracks is you can tell that the people who wrote them had orchestras in their head.
Sure.
Like they're composed as if they are symphonic, but it wasn't until these special edition albums or whatever would come out that you would get to hear the true, quote unquote, true version of these themes. I'm going to go second here, and I'm going to go in chronological order of release so that I can also play a Super NES game here. And it, too, had a symphonic release, but I didn't queue it up for you guys. Instead, I want you to imagine a lot of these games had very short loops in their title screens. You know, like it would be like one or two phrases and then you would repeat it. When you boot up Secret of Mana, you are treated to a theme that just grows and grows and grows with an excellent splash screen that has this huge tree and your three main characters standing small in the corner looking up at it. And this is how it plays.
Man.
And listen, because each time it plays through, it builds. Like, I would put in this cartridge and stare at the screen, and when it's re-released on, like, Virtual Console or something, I would just get it for this opening.
Wow.
To have it playing in the background.
Wow, and I have the visual of the title screen in front of me, and it's really cool.
Yeah. There's, like, I think flamingos or something flying overhead,
yeah.
But it's just the main character staring at the Tree of Mana, and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. I think that's one of the best. I think the title screen and the music in Secret of Mana overall are what have given any legacy to that game, because every time they bring out some new update, like either a remaster of the original or like a sequel, it sells like trash. But they keep putting it out, and I think it's because of the feeling of that first game, which just has never been eclipsed by any of the sequels.
I'm familiar with that track, although I've never played the original game, which is one of those things where it's like, you know, as a kid, it's just like those are the games that you got the games that you got.
Yeah.
And like for me, it was, yeah, I played the Final Fantasies. I played Chrono Trigger. But Secret of Mana was a gap in my knowledge. That said, that track is fantastic. And I love when the bass kicks in, that crawling bass line.
I did not have this game when I was a kid. I was playing it on an ex-boyfriend's Super Nintendo. And it wasn't a pleasurable experience. It was a shitty experience. But once I got a Super Nintendo of my own, it was one of the very first games that I purchased because the game is so fucking good. And I'm staring at it. Here, I'll just hold it up in front of camera so you guys can go.
Heather has stepped away for a second.
Oh, she's
wow.
got
wow.
it back.
Yes.
We see it. The listener,
yeah.
You're just going to have to picture what that looks like.
I have
are you sure
map,
you wanna...
I think. In here?
Are you sure you want to hold that up thing. To camera instead of selling that on eBay for $30,000? What a collection.
Man,
what a collection
there
Heather
was,
has.
Yeah.
There is a cheap-ass gamer post from this morning that was like, hey, before the Wii U and 3DS stores close up, maybe download these digital versions of these games that are going for thousands of dollars on eBay so that you could play them.
God, Nintendo is so frustrating. Why are they closing that? I mean, we know why they're doing it, but it just sucks. It's just, you know, you can't. That was one of the cool things is that you can still buy when we were covering games on the 3DS games on this podcast or DS games. Just like you can still buy that stuff on the eShop.
Yeah.
Now it's just going away.
Yeah.
Fucking bummer.
But in a year, I mean, it could be worse. It could be like 3 weeks from now.
True.
You know,
or they could have done it 35 minutes ago. Like they could have just done it.
Pulled an Ozymandias.
Yeah.
I think it's nice to give people a heads up. That's
true.
Large of a window. Like if they're going to do it, at least do it that way. As opposed to like when the Vita store was announced closing, it was like Sony's like, the store is going to close at the end of the week. And everyone was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And then they were like, never
just
mind.
Kidding.
We're going to keep it open.
All right, Matt, what's your first pick?
Okay, my first pick, just to keep it in chronological order, I'll do this. Do this one. I mean, this is probably from... God, I mean, it's probably from one of my favorite games of all time. And if I stop and really think about it, it's in the top three for sure.
Wow, top three.
And I mean, look, we're just gonna get it right out of the way. It's a Pokemon game, and it's the like opening animation leading up to the title screen for Pokemon Gold and Silver.
Hmm.
It starts like this. You're like, what is it? What? And then you hear this and you're like, okay, yeah, here we go. it's just so nice. I love it. And then it like it starts to really kick in and like kind of like whip ass. It's really good. And really cool,
yeah, fantastic.
Sprite animation in this, really fun. Then this happens, and you're like, oh, now we're talking. We're just in battle on. Mode here.
Wow, that's a lot of feelings.
Yeah. And there you have it. That's
good stuff.
Though that's like me at 9 years old. That's the sound of me being nine. I loved it. Man, oh man, I can't wait to get my my analog pocket and like in replay Pokemon Gold. I can't wait to do it.
In some sense, that's some of the most impressive game composition is what was done for the Game Boy and Game Boy Color.
Yeah.
When, you know, just such a limited tool set and just crafting these amazing chiptunes that have stayed with you. It's great. Great use of making the limitations a strength.
Honestly, yeah. I was going to say, with what little they had, they really cranked out some bangers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Mm.
Wow. Well, hey, going from chiptunes to basically full orchestration.
Wow.
I'm continuing mine in chronological order. This is by the composer here is Michael Hoenig. And this is from the Enhanced Edition, although I think it's very, very similar to what was in the original. Hoenig, mostly a film and TV composer, the Blob, Max Headroom. And I believe this series is some of his only game credits, maybe his only game credits. The series is Baldur's Gate, the BioWare RPG series, isometric, that really put them on the map as a developer. And this is from Baldur's Gate 2, Shadows of Alm. This is the main title.
Hell yes. Woo. Hell yeah.
I think what makes this and so many of these, what we've heard so far, effective main title themes is they're just like, let's fucking go.
Yeah.
Like this is what, like, here we go. Here we are. When you can really just set the tone for what to expect when you're actually getting into the meat of the game. That one also, as it goes, it kind of gets into like a little bit more of a, because this track will continue, you know, if you're through character creation, which can be a lengthy process. So it's really got a lot of, like the Secret of Mana track, it's got a lot of different pieces to it. It develops as it progresses. So it kind of settles into like a more mellow groove as we go. It's fucking great. It's a great, great track.
I feel like if you played that when I went into the kitchen to make my lunch, I'd make the best sandwich of my life. Like, I'd be like, you know what? This needs crispy bacon. Yeah. Let's make bacon. I'm gonna put it on top of that turkey. Oh, I'm gonna heat the cheese up a little bit. So it's a soft cheese, but a crispy bacon. Mm. Let's go.
Best sandwich. So far, one of my tracks makes you believe in God, and the other makes you make a perfect sandwich.
Yeah.
We'll see what the third one holds.
Before I forget, before we do my second track, I do want to say that the first track I played was by the composer Hiroki Kikuta, and it was one of only three game soundtracks that he composed at Squaresoft before it was merged with Enix, which were Secret of Mana, Trials of Mana, and Sokaigi for the PlayStation. And in Wikipedia, he talks about, or they quote, that he talks about how much freedom he had to compose the score to this game because Nobuo Uematsu, who does all the Final Fantasy scores, had a separate division at Squaresoft. So I think that that's part of why the Final Fantasy games have such incredible scores as well. And speaking of Final Fantasy, my next track for best main title themes of all time is from a game that came out in the year 2000, and it's Final Fantasy IX.
I mean, you could put this in Lord of the Rings and you wouldn't notice.
Yeah.
This was the last full Nobuo Uematsu score for Final Fantasy games. The last one he composed in its entirety. And I think one of the things about Final Fantasy games soundtracks is that they're a little bit mournful. Like, the themes are never that sort of, that bravado that Nick's tracks sort of let, like, you're, oh, I'm going to do this. They're always a little bit sad, you know, like something terrible has happened or something terrible must be done. And even though that isn't always executed in the game, you feel like these villages you're visiting in Final Fantasy games are run down in part because the music is sometimes so sad.
Mm-hmm.
Even the overworld theme to Final Fantasy VII, which is probably the best overworld theme, although I think 9 gives it a real run for its money, is kind of sad. Like, you beat a monster, and then it's like, well, let's do this. It's the world's gonna end.
Yeah, it is kind of does have that sort of plaintive quality to it.
Oh, thanks. Did you play the song?
That was me. Yeah, on the Uematsu and I Go Way Back.
Oh, wow.
I was gonna say that makes me think that the prelude, which is, I believe, Final Fantasy I, that's the main title theme there. That's when it's first introduced. But, you know, the famous arpeggiated track that surfaces in every Final Fantasy, that in itself is kind of melancholy. So I think you're right. It's just, it always is. The other thing I was going to say, and I love Final Fantasy IX, it's also in context, coming off of 6, 7, and 8, which were all kind of, you know, 6 was still a little steampunky, but 7 and 8 were very much more like cyberpunky, you know, sci-fi more than fantasy. And this was the return to form. And I think that like the way that is orchestrated, that track is orchestrated, very much kind of anchors it more back in that, you know, high fantasy sort of feel, which that particular entry in the franchise had. So yeah, a fucking great track. Great pick.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, all right, Matt, what do you got?
I'm about to sequence break us. Okay, we're going to skip way ahead. We're
wow.
Because now it's going to be hard to be chronological with the order that we have before us now. So my pick is from one of my favorite games from the PS4 era, a game that I think I finished not that long ago, honestly, maybe at this point 2 years ago, a little bit, maybe a little less. And it's a game that I really love. And I always love the music in these games. And it's just the opening title music for God of War for PS4. Mm. Like, they don't fuck around with this.
Yeah, this is good.
This sounds like you ordered too much at Taco Bell. They're just handing you bag after bag.
And they're like mad at me because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's 15 tacos.
That's nice that you think that that's too much. Just a real, I mean, they always really set the tone with the music in these games, and this rocks. I love this.
Yeah, it's great.
Bear McCreary is the composer of that one. Bear McCreary.
Great track.
Does great work.
It's good. I mean, the score to God of War is fucking great. It really made me feel like a tough dad.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I was like, I am really disciplining my son right now. He's going to learn a valuable lesson about what it is to be a god.
My son respects me. That's the power fantasy here.
He's not infected with the things his mother puts in his head.
Great pick. Great picks from both of you. My final pick. First off, I want to talk about the cutting room floor. A few ones that I almost picked. Chrono Trigger, Marvel Capcom 2, Super Mario World, which I mentioned up top, and another Uematsu track. In fact, the only Uematsu track he composed for this franchise. And as a commenter pointed out when I was listening back to this, maybe the still the best track in the entire series. The main title theme for Super Smash Bros. Brawl is just one of the most epic pieces of music that of all time. It's just so fucking great. And that's Nobuo Uematsu's one contribution to Super Smash Bros. But I'm going a different direction just because I think this one has to be on the list. This is from Katamari Damacy, Katamari on the Rocks, composed by Yu Miyake.
Wow. I love that little guy.
Yeah. It's just a tonal table setter. So
right
good.
After the, like, excellent, like, na 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 na,
yes.
Like, just the, like, a cappella version of the theme over the Bandai Namco or whatever it was logo.
Yeah.
Oof.
It's like they slammed their dick on the table with
what?
The first one.
And then hit it with a hammer.
And then the second song, it's like, wait, there's more dick.
Really, really great track. Yu Miyake worked at Namco and maybe still is at Namco, but Tekken and Ridge Racer, most of their credits. But it's very impressive, just like the range displayed in this one, because it's such a distinct soundtrack that's as eccentric orally, A-U-R-A-L-L-Y, as the game is visually and, you know, story-wise. It's fucking great fit for the game, great way to set the table for what we're about to expect.
Do you know that you're the only person that ever has to specify which orally you're talking about?
It's just me.
Oh boy. Well, switching gears completely from what was just played, I was thinking, like, oh, I want to do something from each generation. And that's impossible with only three picks. But I did pick a more recent track. And this piece of music sets the tone for this game more perfectly than any other piece of music has ever set the tone for a game ever. Final offer, final answer. I'm going to the board with it. From The Last of Us title screen and composed by Gustavo Santaolalla. Santaolalla? I don't know. Boy. Santaolalla. Sure. This is The Last of Us. I mean, this is a game where you're just looking for a can to be able to put some nails in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's extremely minimalist.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the sort of like musical equivalent of, well, fuck, everything's bad.
Yeah. This soundtrack I found so incredible and inspirational that on my very first date with my girlfriend, Mary Laws, I brought up not only the game, but the score itself. And then years later, when she had her own TV show, she reached out to Gustavo to be the composer on Monsterland.
Wow.
In part because of how emphatic I was about this being the best video game soundtrack ever made. That's not to say that she loved like Babel's score. Like, it wasn't like I was like the only human being who'd ever brought up this person.
Right.
But I think I played the soundtrack to this in the house for a long time. Like, it's perfect. It's such an incredible score.
Great score.
It's incredible.
A really good first track too, which was exactly your point. It's just.
Yep.
Sorry, you had a thought. Yeah, I feel like you were about to complete.
Yeah, I have no idea what I was thinking. My brain is a mystery to me.
I read something about the actual virus the fungus that inspired the cordyceps in Last of Us.
I think I read this too, Nick. Please share.
Fungus that infects ants and controls their bodies, but they did some research. This was from a few years ago. They did some research into how this actually worked mechanically, because it's a fungus that takes over ants and makes them just sort of, clamp and takes complete control of their bodies. And they found that it does not touch the ants' brains. It just takes over their muscular function. So basically what's happening in reality is that the ants are becoming prisoners in their own bodies. Like, their brains are still active and still perceiving everything, but their bodies are being puppeteered by this fungus that is making them, leading them to a slow, agonizing death. And if you think about that in terms of The Last of Us's canon, which I'm not sure if that's what happens, but if you apply that and you're like, oh, that's what's happening in Last of Us, it's even more of a nightmare.
Yeah.
How is that different from our day-to-day lives when our brains are prisoners of our bodies?
That's true. No, fair point.
So I feel like every morning, you wake up and you're like, oh no. Right, Matt?
Yeah. Not again.
Not again.
I thought it was all a terrible, terrible dream.
Maybe I do want a fungus to decide what I do with my arms and legs.
Yeah. Probably make me stronger.
It's exhausting.
Yeah. Utilize my muscles in a more practical way. How about we go on to my final pick? This one.
Please.
Is a newer game also. Not super new, but, newish. And I just love this game top to bottom. One of the most charming games I've played in many years. I loved this game. And the main theme from it is fantastic. It's Ori and the Blind Forest.
Oh, hell yeah.
Like, put it in a Disney Pixar movie. This whole score is really fantastic. It's really, really great. And I still have not finished. What's that?
I said, or a Cirque du Soleil show.
Oh yeah. Honestly, there should be more video game Cirque du Soleil shows. But the I never finished the second one. The second game.
It's good.
I should get back into it. I liked it.
I love both those games. The composer Gareth Coker.
Gareth Coker.
And worked on both Ori games and had a hand in the score of Halo Infinite.
Oh.
So good for Gareth.
Wow, go off, Gareth.
Yeah.
Man, yeah, we really covered the map, but that song, I really like that just the music in that game quite a bit. I like the music in all the games we picked. I feel like if a game has at least one good song in it, the rest of them aren't bad either. You know what I mean? Like, the music is typically all of a piece. It's all very good. But the ones that we picked, that's why we had to narrow it down, right?
That's right.
That's why we
had to be listening to main title themes all day.
Yeah. It's fantastic stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I should have mentioned that the Ori games were, on our Game Pass episode. Those were a couple of games that I came to via Game Pass.
Yeah, me too.
That's the reason I played through both of those and loved them to death.
So I love that little guy. Yeah. Such a little sweetie.
Why don't we pivot from listening to music to listening to
listeners.
Some questions
That's right. It's time for the question block. So we've got some, I think, music-related queries for this particular edition. We solicited some of your... we were a little bit more targeted in what we were asking for you to ask.
Yeah.
So let's get into some of these, Matt.
Okay, here we go. This one is from Trevor Waldman, and they write, my question is, if you could pick any video game victory tune, the sound that plays when you win a battle in Final Fantasy, the jingle that plays when you beat a level in Super Mario Brothers, even the sound from when you get an item in Zelda, etc., what that would play when you complete any task, no matter how menial, which would it be? I personally would feel 10 times more accomplished if I heard the Final Fantasy victory sound after I made my bed in the morning. Thanks, Trevor.
Does it have to be a victory sound? I want to make sure that I'm not going against the spirit of the question with my answer. It's just a sound, correct?
It can be anything. I guess it is victory. Because it has to inspire that sort of like task completion, sort of thing. But if it's you could pick any sound you want.
Okay. So if I've just finished making my bed, this is the sound I want to hear. If I've just finished my cup of coffee, this is the sound I want to hear. If I've just finished watering my plants and I've hang up the hose, this is the sound that I want to hear. I've signed in at the doctor's office. It's the Doom 2016 shotgun sound effect.
Pretty good.
It's really good.
It feels like a victory, doesn't it? It's a little bit like a thunderclap, and it's a little bit like pumping your fist.
Yeah. It's like, well, it's also, you know, you're the Doom guy. So it's like, hey, this didn't happen to me.
I feel like the questioner used up some of the best ones. I mean, I think that Final Fantasy victory theme is always what I think of. But in the spirit of what Heather just did, I've got a little different direction. This always makes me think of victory.
I'm a warrior. I'm gonna win.
I'm a warrior. I'm gonna win.
That's perfect.
Really, really good. Hold on. I want to find a funny one.
You just took a shit on the street. I'm a warrior. I'm gonna win.
Can't argue with that. You know what's a very satisfying sound?
What? Go ahead, Nick. What?
You know what's a very satisfying sound in games is, we were talking about upgrades earlier, but I'm thinking of like beat 'em ups have this a lot of times, or where you finish a level and then you just get like just dials going up really rapidly, like accumulating all of your points, just like a.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
Death Stranding had excellent crunchy sounds every time you made a delivery.
Great. Yeah, those were really
so good. So good.
Here's my victory sound for when I like, let's say like, yeah, I do something good. You know, I finished all my work for today, or, you know, I ate all my dinner or something. Mm-hmm. This is what plays after that.
Hail to the king, baby.
Oh man.
Wow. Hail to the king, baby.
I just finished plant-based chicken nuggets from KFC.
Hail to the king, baby.
Those aren't bad.
No, those are all good.
I'm sure they're delicious. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, that wasn't me saying bad. Those are bad. I didn't think it was.
No, I was just commenting. I've had them. They're not bad.
I just jammed a Barbie doll into one of her little dresses.
Hail to the king, baby.
Jammed.
Let's do Duke him up to.
Goo goo gaga. I'm a baby.
I hope that satisfied your question, Trevor. And why don't we play a voicemail from a listener?
What's up, Get Played Players? I'm at DonJuanG13 on Twitter.
All right.
I was just wondering, like, what do you guys think about Nintendo and their music? Because it kind of leads to piracy, because they have some of the best music out there, and they took down a bunch of YouTube soundtracks, and they're not available on CD, and they're not available on streaming services. So what the hell, Nintendo? Put them up, or you're making us all pirates. Arrgh! All right, peace out.
I mean,
what a chiller this guy was. Fantastic.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Great energy. Nintendo is, we were talking about them being annoying with the fucking eShop earlier. They're always doing dumb shit like that. They're taking down, and I get that you have to be vigorous legally because capitalism is stupid in terms of IP, that unless you enforce a copyright, it shit gets, you know, taken down. Or your copyright becomes null over time, so you have to aggressively get shit taken down. So I get on some level why they're aggressive about, you know, fan remakes and fan demakes and shit. But also that sucks. They don't have to target that stuff as aggressively as they do. Some of that stuff I feel like they could probably use a lighter touch for. Taking the soundtracks off of YouTube, it's just like, what are we doing here? That's not hurting anyone. That's not taking revenue out of anyone's pocket. It's just a fucking bummer. Yeah, it sucks.
I'm just so surprised that Nintendo would make such a polarizing choice like that to do something like that. I just it's very unlike them to
make
their fan base upset in any sort of way.
Yeah.
It is so strange to me that companies, like, on the surface, all companies want is money, right? They just want money, lots mm-hmm. of money. Like, what, like, just releasing soundtracks to Super Nintendo games on iTunes or Apple Music or Spotify or whatever the fuck, like, wouldn't that just be free money? Like, isn't that
you would
just
think so?
Like, they're already made. Nobody's buying these games off of the, you know, Switch store in order to just play the soundtracks. So it is a secondary revenue stream. It's like, why doesn't Doritos release their nacho flavoring as a shaker so you can put it on everything at your house? Like, I want Doritos taste, but I don't want the chips. I'll put it on my popcorn. I'm hungry for Doritos taste. I'm going to shake it on fried chicken. That's free money, Doritos.
Yeah.
Same thing here, Nintendo. You've already made the thing. Give it to the people, and they'll pay you.
That's another idea, Heather. You should print out and mail to yourself. The Doritos dust.
Yeah, Dorito fried chicken. What are you get Guy Fieri on the phone? What are you doing?
He answers the phone with "Hail to the King, baby."
He probably would. Yeah.
Man, this guy rules.
This listener sent in a voice memo. So they sent an email and didn't, but with an audio file attached, which I thought was different, but also the quality of the sound is good. So I wanted to let you know so you're not like, why does he sound so good? There's a backstory to it. So here you go.
Hey guys, my name is Ian. I'm from Seattle, Washington. And when I was younger, I would play Lord of the Rings Two Towers on GameCube while only listening to the Strokes' first album. And I would do this every single day so much that to this day, those two kind of just go hand in hand for me. I just can't think of one without the other. And I can't listen to the album without thinking of the video game. So my question is, do you guys have any kind of music, video game relationships like that? Do you guys even listen to music while playing, or is it too distracting? Anyway, thank you guys so much. Love you all. Bye.
Matt, you really teed that up. I was expecting that audio to be crystal clear. It was fine.
Oh. Well, it's voice memo quality. Jesus. It's really good. Like that.
You overhyped the audio quality. It was good.
Nick, so harsh. Fine.
I was expecting you to have to be blown back in your seat.
I actually have a really clear answer for this. Mm-hmm. Which is that I played both GoldenEye and Perfect Dark on the N64 with their soundtrack muted, just the gun sounds turned up, and then the face-off score playing in my apartment.
That's cool.
I had like a, you know, one of those early MP3 players or whatever, and I just like made a little tiny action music mix that I could, because, you know, those looping sounds from the N64, they're not super satisfying after a while. Like you, as much as you love Dire Docks, if that was all you heard for a month and a half, you'd be like, okay, I gotta play something else. So anytime I hear music from Face Off, which doesn't happen very often, I still think about those early multiplayer matches.
Yeah, I don't have a great answer myself here, just because I always listen to game audio, and people who I know people do it. People probably listen to this podcast while gaming. People put on No Man's Sky or something and kind of just sort of, you know, relax and have an audiobook or a podcast playing. I can't do that. And I like listening. I just like some of my favorite music is game music. So I always listen to game audio. However, I had a roommate in college who was a big gamer and like me, and had a story of in high school, got their hands on a porno cassette. This is the VHS porno days, and was watching a porno with their friends while their parents were sleeping. But because they realized the porno audio would cue their parents into what they were doing, they plugged in their N64 into the audio jack and put up the main menu for Diddy Kong Racing. So the title theme of Diddy Kong Racing was playing in the background while they were watching hardcore pornography. And I always have that connection.
That's
just VHS, PNV, porno with the Diddy Kong soundtrack.
Wow.
Yeah. That's wild. That's what a choice.
Yeah.
They probably can't listen to
cover.
A great cover. I'm not dissing the ingenuity. I think that's fantastic. That's faster than having your finger on the like last channel button. You know, that's you're playing 4D chess when you're doing that. That's, you know, congrats.
I gotta just do. We just have to experience this real quick. Hold on. I'll play this.
I thought you were gonna show us a porno. I was like, no.
Yeah, I'll put on some porno. Just share my search history. Here we go. Just imagine this is playing while you're watching some hardcore action. Oddly kind of works.
Yeah. It makes it seem a little silly that they're doing this. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, sex is kind of funny now.
Yeah.
That's unhinged. That's...
Yeah.
I have another question here that's... It's maybe a little similar to the previous question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because I have a specific answer for it. What video game music do you put
jerk off?
Yeah, and it's submitted by Nick Weiger. So this is from Nico V, and they write, I'd love to know if any of you have ever found yourselves disabling the background music in a video game. Maybe you preferred to go silent or switched it out with another playlist of your choosing. For example, after countless hours in No Man's Sky, I would use the Interstellar soundtrack instead, which made even mindless tasks feel more epic. So I had a specific, because like on most modern consoles, you can integrate Spotify with your gameplay. And so I would turn down the in-game music in the PS4 Spider-Man and put on like Wu-Tang and like swing around the city listening to Wu-Tang And it just felt, I don't know, it felt like way cooler. It was really, because Wu-Tang's awesome. That's a soundbite for you. Just me, a video game playing dork, Wu-Tang's awesome. it made my enjoyment of that game just more fun. But the only thing is, it's not dynamic, right? So if you get into a cutscene, you have, you know, RZA talking over, you know, whatever's going on at Feast, and it's like, it's a little hard to then understand what's going on. So you have to sort of time it right, but it's good stuff. I highly recommend doing that, by the way. It's very fun.
There you go. And it sounds like Heather had her answer with the Face Off soundtrack. Yeah. I just don't do it. I like the game audio.
You know,
I like game soundtracks,
you know,
maybe I should try it.
I give it a shot, you know? Why not?
I feel like there's maybe games I've muted the music for because it's just like the loop gets annoying, but I can't think of a specific instance.
Yeah, I would do that. I mean, because a lot of my early gaming was handheld, Game Boy, you know, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, and often I would be watching TV also.
Right.
So I would like have like cartoons on in the background or something, and I'd be playing Pokemon, but I'd have the Game Boy muted, like, or turned down rather. And so I'd just be like half watching a cartoon and then going back to the game every so often. And then wondering, how come these batteries run out so often?
Well, hey, that's this week's Get Played. Follow us on social media at Get Played Pod. Our music and engineering are by Devin Bryan. You can follow him on Twitter at BaffleGabs.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you should know that you got played.
fuck. And stuff like that.